I mean, you do you. I'm not going to tell you not to do extra work because this is America and we're built on meaningless labor.
1, 2, 3, hit it, boy!
Get together, have a few laughs.
Uh-oh! Shit, lady, do I sound like I'm ordering a pizza?
Lady, put the freaking gun down on the ground right now. Take your shot and cross the freaking street and say it until he's going to get you!
Hello! And welcome to Where There's a Willis, There's a Way, a film podcast about the multitude of works by Bruce Willis. My name is Josh Carter.
And I'm Kendrick Martin. Today we'll be covering 1999's Breakfast of Champions, written and directed by Alan Rudolph, based on the book by Kurt Vonnegut. Now you might be saying, 1999's? By gosh golly gee boys, I thought we were in the 2000s. Well, you'd be correct.
That's right, Robin.
If this is your first time listening to this podcast, what we do here is an in-depth breakdown of a movie starring Bruce Willis, both from a film perspective and his individual contribution. We add the movie to our rankings, talk trivia, and then do the Wheel of Willis.
You can find all of our previous episodes at williswaypod.com. Find other podcasts in the Last of the Action Heroes podcast network over at lastoftheactionheroes.com. Thank you to everyone who supports this podcast. If you want to support this podcast, you can head on over to anchor.fm/Willis-Way. And your support definitely goes a long way in helping us produce everything. And then if you want to support us for free, you can do that by keeping us in your thoughts and prayers, as well as reviewing us on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever else you listen to podcasts.
And then tell your friends. Thoughts and prayers.
Yeah, thoughts and prayers. Thoughts and prayers. And then make sure to tell every single person that you know about our podcast, because everyone needs some Bruce Willis in their lives.
Speaking of Bruce Willis in their lives, we have an Apple Podcast review to read.
Bow, 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 bow.
Do you want to read this or do you want me to?
Well, I would volunteer to read it, but I do not have that that thing up, so I...
Oh. Smooth. This review comes it's 5 stars, and it's been a little while. I apologize, we haven't recorded in a little bit, but it is from username Lil YYYCW, and the subject is less than three, which I believe is what the kids call the heart symbol. Phenomenal. I love you two white guys with my whole heart. Well, thank you, Lil YCW. We appreciate your love. And again, if you want to leave us a review, you can head on over to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other places that let you rate podcasts. All right. So we're going to be talking about 1999's Breakfast of Champions. Now, what we do here on this podcast is upfront give you an idea of whether or not we think this movie is worth watching. And if it is worth watching, oftentimes we recommend going and watching it, then coming back. And that way you don't get spoiled by any of the great twists and turns and flips and flops. But other times, some movies just aren't worth watching. And we watch them for you. We watch them for you. Now, how do you know if this movie's worth watching? Well, that's easy. We have a 3-point rating system. Point number one. Every movie gets a rating. Point number two, we rate a movie a Bruce Willis out of a Bruce Willis. The more letters it gets, the better we think it is. And point number three, if a movie falls below a Willis in the rating scale, we do not think it's worth watching. So with those 3 points in mind, Joshua, what would you rate Breakfast of Champions?
Before I rate that, I just wanted to say that was a really succinct way to say all of our nonsense that we've been saying for many, many moons. So I know that we don't usually applaud each other on this podcast, but like, God damn, well done.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Have fun syncing those claps, asshole. I say to myself as I'm probably editing this episode. Anyways. Yeah. So we hunted for this movie. And we hunted and we gathered and we foraged, and I wish I didn't. I'm going to give it a B.
Wow, a B. A B, you say.
A B.
But not the B movie, but a B.
No. The B movie would oddly enough be higher than a B in my book.
So. Oh, well, that's a topic for a different conversation. I don't have a lot of love for this movie, but I don't have a lot of hate for this movie either. I can appreciate some of what it's doing, but not much. So I'm going to give it a brew, a BRU. Mm. So not much better than a B, but slightly better.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. That's pretty controversial, though. We're usually within a letter of each other. So,
yes.
You know, two apart.
Yes. Right. Or like vastly different.
Yes. Oh, yeah, that is true. That is true. There are those every once in a while.
Okay. So before we dive into the movie, let us read an email. Now you can get a hold of us at sending an email. You can send an email to us at willisswaypod@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter or Instagram or TikTok. I think I'm gonna guess Josh has made a TikTok or two about us. And yeah, those are all found at willisswaypod. And okay, this email is in reference to our Tears of the Sun episode. Josh, do you want to read this email from Nathan?
Yep, I will. Okay, so Nathan writes, friends, period, which is kind of an intimidating way to open up an email, not even a comma, so he's already starting out strong. It is incredibly daring of you to feature an episode with 14 minutes of silence at the end, where some unfortunate man, period, would listen all the way through, period, to be sure if he missed something, period. What a compelling, period, choice you have made, period. I look forward, period, to the next episode, period. Sincerely, Nathan. And you're welcome, Nathan. We put in that 14 minutes of silence as a shout out to our friend Technical Difficulties. It was not intended. I do apologize.
Yeah, you know how sometimes you take a minute of silence for out of respect? We just took 14 minutes out of respect once. And are now very respectful.
We're trying to catch up on our respectfulness.
Yes, yeah, we're preempting and post-empting our respect.
true. And then we had one more email that got unfortunately buried in the spam filter because the email spam filters on Gmail is pretty bad. But I was luckily sent it again, and so I will go ahead and read it out. And the why the fuck do I always have a hard time with this? The subject line says, important question. It's literally every single goddamn time.
It was like, is he having technical difficulties? Is his email giving him 14 minutes of silence? Like, oh no, he just can't remember a word. I should have guessed.
I should just put that in the show notes. Like, it's called subject line. Like, don't forget it, dumbass. Okay. Important question on Bruce the G, Thugga, with an A. And the email reads as follows. So, did he really go over the hedge? And if so, how hard did he die? Please answer this query urgently fast. I am so concerned with the safety of my Brucey boy lover man. And then it is the, like, it's a face that, you know, it's a little emoji face that's hard to explain. Looks like it's gasping for something or other. Mm. I don't know. And then it just says, also, I love pirates. Just thought you should know. Thanks for your time. Much love. Brucey boy, lover man fan, 668.
And this was not spam, you said.
This was not spam. And somehow Gmail, those bastards, they thought it was spam. I don't know how. It's the most legitimate sounding email we've ever received on this podcast.
Well, Brucey Boy Lover 668, we appreciate your thoughtful words and enjoy reading your email.
As far as your questions, we have no answers. We haven't gotten through all the Die Hard movies and we haven't gotten over the hedge yet. So,
yep.
Save your questions for when they're relevant.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of tears for my son in that email. I can tell your silence is sending me under siege. No, the siege? Boy, I'm feeling a real jackal moment coming on. Okay, before we get into talking about our movie of the episode, Breakfast of Champions, we are going to take a quick break.
life of danger. To everyone he meets, he stays a stranger.
All right, now we're going to get into talking about Breakfast of Champions. Now, before we really dived in, I wanted to try to set the stage. So our previous movies, we had been in the early 2000s, and now we're going back to 1999. And the reason is, as Josh already mentioned, this movie did not have a wide release, and it also never had a digital release, or I don't think any at-home release.
No, it was released on DVD and VHS.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was trying to read the Wikipedia page and it was like never released, but it must have just been referring to digital release.
Yeah.
So it took some tracking down to find, but we finally did it. And so that's why we're kind of coming around to it late in the moment. But I wanted to talk about 1999. So September 1999, ironically, do you know, maybe you already looked this up, what the number one movie at the box office would have been when this movie came out?
The number one movie?
Yeah.
God, I'm trying to think of what even came out in 1999. Did X-Men come out? No, that was 2000. Yeah, I don't know. I give up.
The Sixth Sense.
Ah, no. No.
Yep.
Don't ever pick me for trivia. Even if it's something that's in my wheelhouse, I still yeah. fuck it up.
I was like, am I giving this away? No, I'm not giving it away. yeah, The Sixth Sense, which was released early August, still was like raking in the money, which The Sixth Sense, definitely one of the unique box office cases with the fact that it just kept on going.
Oh, yeah.
So do you happen to know what the number one song would have been?
I don't even have any context for music at this age. I was four.
Oh, are you only aware of things that have happened after your birth?
Well, four was after my birth, so logically the answer must be no.
Bailamos or Bailamos by Enrique Iglesias would have been the number one song. I'm not sure what the song is about because it is in Spanish, but it is a very well-known song. You would have known this song.
Okay. You got any number two songs that I
would have known? Insert clip of this song here because Josh would have heard of it. I won't be leaving your side. We're gonna dance through the night. I wanna reach for the stars. Bailamo. Let the rhythm take you over. Bailamo. Te quiero. Vamos vivo. Bailamo. Number two songs, you said?
Yeah.
Let's look at the internet. What does Billboard Top 100 say for song number two? Genie in a Bottle by Christina Aguilera.
I also don't know that I've heard that one.
Oh my gosh. Seriously? Are you joking me?
I don't think I'm joking you.
Okay. Well, I'm going to skip down to number five, All Star by Smash Mouth.
Never heard of it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You're not a big Shrek man.
No. I am kidding. I've definitely heard that one.
yeah. And then finally, the last little bit of 1999 trivia. So I looked up popular news items in September 1999. One thing I wanted to call out was there was a Mars robot that was supposed to be the first ever craft to orbit Mars and check on the weather, and it crashed into the planet.
Oops.
And NASA's answer said, embarrassed NASA says mistake caused by navigators who assumed figures provided by contractors were in metric units when in fact they were English measurements. Foiled again by the metric
the imperial
system.
Oh, yeah. Oh, the metric system's the bad guys in your story?
I don't think there's really a bad guy. It's mainly just America.
Oh, true. So true. So true. I mean, we love America. Please don't come after us. That's country number one.
Other countries don't come after us, or who you talk? Who's?
I don't know. I don't know. The anti-America legion of enforcement of America.
Okay. And with that, let's get into Breakfast of Champions.
Somewhere in America, in a town called Midland City.
Breakfast of Champions, Mr. Hoover.
There's a man everyone trusts.
I trust him.
And everyone admires.
Dwayne Hoover.
Dwayne Hoover.
Dwayne Hoover.
That there is Dwayne Hoover on television.
People know who you are, don't they?
Dwayne Hoover has it all.
The best employer in town.
There it is. There's that smile.
But he's about to lose his mind. In a search for sanity.
Dwayne Hoover, am I losing you?
The only thing anyone's losing around here is their mind, Francine.
Dwayne?
Because in Midland City...
I know things that could make your head spin.
My head spins all the time. I'm trying to make it stop.
Everybody has an agenda.
If there's anything you need, I mean anything.
Can't trust these people. Got that right.
Everybody has a motive.
Be right back, fellas. We're just going to the bank. Maybe stop for a snack.
Stick around.
Go for it, big boy.
But only one man.
Kilgore Trout.
Kilgore Trout.
Kilgore Trout.
Has the answer.
Who am I?
If you knew the answer, there'd be no more questions.
Summit Entertainment and Flying Heart Films present...
You having any problems?
A story of finding everything you ever wanted to know about life.
Dwayne knows. Everybody knows.
In a town you never knew existed.
Where am I?
In Midland City.
What is going on here? Hey!
From the best-selling novel by Kurt Vonnegut Jr., Bruce Willis, Albert Finney, Nick Nolte, Barbara Hershey, Lucas Haas, Omar Epps, and Glenn Headley.
You don't have to be crazy to work here, but... sure helps.
Oh, what the hell I meant by that, huh?
An Alan Rudolph film. Breakfast of Champions.
That audio was from the trailer of Breakfast of Champions. I'm going to go ahead and read this plot summary from Wikipedia. Dwayne Hoover, a car salesman who is most respected, who is the most respected businessman in Midland, Atlanta. You know what? Reading's hard. Reading's hard. Stay in school, kids.
Subject line.
Subject line. Blah, blah, blah. Dwayne Hoover, a car salesman who is the most respected businessman in Midland City, Indiana, is on the verge of a nervous breakdown, even attempting suicide daily. His wife, Celia, is addicted to pills, and his sales manager and best friend, Harry Lee Sabre,
is LeSabre, but keep going.
LeSabre is preoccupied with his own secret fondness for wearing lingerie, worried he will be discovered. Meanwhile, a little-known science fiction author, Kilgore Trout, is hitchhiking across the United States to speak at Midland City's Arts Festival. In search of answers for his identity quest, Hoover decides... For his identity quest? I didn't even say that wrong. That just doesn't make any sense. Hoover decides to attend the festival. And you can find this movie nowhere. Good luck! That was perfect. No redos on the takes.
Nope. Speaking of nailed which, it. First try, too.
Yeah, first try. Speaking of which, so this movie is you know, it's a lot. I don't even know like entirely where to start with this one.
How about this? Have you read neither of us have read this book by Kurt Vonnegut. Have you read any other Kurt Vonnegut books?
Mm-mm.
I have read Slaughterhouse 5, which, you know, lots of people have. And then I've also read Sirens of Titan, which is one of his earlier science fiction books. Very thematic in all of his work, and I don't think this is at all subtle, is his themes are very present on the page, and I think that's what makes him so popular with high school reading, because they're relatively short books and the themes come out really quickly, and so you can teach on them without having to spend a lot of time explaining like allegory and references to kids. And one of the themes that he had written in a lot of his books was kind of the problems with a capitalistic society, and along with like being anti-war and other various things. But this book, or this Breakfast of Champions, definitely seemed to be much more anti-capitalist than the ones I'd already read. But it was interesting because I don't feel like a lot of other pop culture movies at the time kind of had that anti-capitalist bent, because of, you know, the movie studio system didn't really allow for a lot of indie films. And I don't think movie studios were interested in kind of telling an anti-capitalist story.
Right. Totally different than nowadays, where movie studios are also not interested at all in telling anti-capitalist stories.
Right. Right. But there's more avenues for
more indie films, certainly.
Yes. For anybody to kind of make a movie about whatever they want, and it can go to any sort of streaming network.
Yeah.
But with all that said, I think this movie to me, struggled with pairing a visual style with a meaningful plot. This movie, the visual style reminded me a lot of Terry Gilliam, and I think all the Dutch angles and kind of like close up, kind of top of the head shots to kind of create like a paranoid, claustrophobic look. But the thing about Terry Gilliam's movies, let's take 12 Monkeys, for example, because we've both seen that one. The thrust of the story kind of is easy to pick out through the chaotic and claustrophobic elements. And like, they make it pretty clear. There's a virus. We're sending this man back in time. Fix the virus. Everybody kind of has their goals and plans in mind. And then as the movie goes on, those kind of start to fall, to blend together and fall apart. And that's where the beauty of the movie comes in. But this movie, Breakfast of Champions, opens with so much chaos and so much unexplained information.
Yeah.
That I was just lost. Like, we're introduced to Bruce Willis's character for the first time. He has like a gun to his head. And then his cook is like, Breakfast of Champions. And I was like,
and
then
it's like zoom, random like zoom shots and like weird Dutch angles. And yeah, it's like the first minute and you have no bearings for the movie at all. Yeah, I was just like constantly going, I just want them to ground me just a little bit. But it just starts out balls to the wall.
One of the things I kind of liked about it, but I don't even know if it was intentional, was right now, in Year of Our Lord 2022, we have a nostalgia for the 90s. I think particularly people who were old enough to remember the 90s, kind of, I think every decade kind of goes through this, where people who grew up weren't adults, and they long for the kind of lack of responsibility that youth comes from. So people are oftentimes talking about, oh, the 90s, you know, pre-9/11, things were great. Things were great for you as a you know, as a kid,
yeah,
or whatever, but as a privileged American who didn't have to deal with certain things. But I think pop culture right now is kind of reflecting a lot of like the 90s love of 90s things, and this movie opens with a bunch of like zany commercials that were very reminiscent of the 90s, and you see the ads for this used car salesman over and over again, and they have like the ridiculous Hawaii trip and everybody's dressing up and all this kind of like over the top business culture that I think was more popular in the 90s, especially in the Midwest, in some of those like communities, like here on the West Coast, there's probably always a little more lackadaisical approach to life, especially in California. But that all just kind of was like an intriguing nostalgic moment. But I don't know if that would have been the case in 1999 when this movie came out.
Yeah.
There was just several elements of the chaos that I did enjoy. The fact that they continually show the street signs for this town. I don't know how big of, or if it's even a real place, of Midland City, Indiana, but it's like the most complicated series of street signs that is just like these highways and these roads all intersect and go here, and just kind of showing the like car heavy, gross.
Strodes.
Also, there's a toxic spill in the beginning of the movie, and it's like repeatedly referenced as to the only way to get into town is to cross this very tiny little sludgy pond that's never really explained, but it just makes the whole town more kind of seem like a ecological disaster. Yeah, there's just a lot of confusion, and I like some of the bits and pieces, but man, one fewer Dutch angle would have gone a long way.
Well, yeah, and it doesn't help that you're introduced to like four kind of central characters right at the beginning. Like you have like Bruce Willis, his wife, who pops in and out throughout the movie, the sales manager guy, and then Albert Finney's character, which doesn't connect to the rest of the movie for like most of the movie. And then at the very end, well, they tie it back in.
But and there's also like that guy who gets out of jail, right?
I don't know. Oh, yeah.
Who has like
Hubler.
Yeah, right. One letter different name. It sounds the same as Dwayne Hoover. Is Wayne Hubler. And he wins a car, but then lives out of his car on the lot of the car dealer.
And he's like selling cars too at the same time. And then,
yeah, but yeah. Yeah. Yep. I think if we were to read this book, we would have been able to suss out the themes better because we wouldn't be hit over the head with kind of this,
all the style.
Yeah. Visual flair.
Yeah.
Which is probably why this movie did so poorly. I think we forgot to mention it opened in limited release for one weekend and did so badly, they just pulled it.
Yep.
Which, yep. I don't know. We haven't talked about it, but have you followed the HBO/Discovery news?
I was like, I wish they'd release Batgirl even just for a weekend.
Well,
that's,
so that's
so batshit that that's all going down. Sorry,
that's go ahead. Well, I was gonna say, so for those of you who don't know, HBO. And HBO Warner Brothers and the Discovery Channel merged, and the new kind of head of this media empire is making a bunch of decisions that seem very unusual. And there have been many a slide deck about leaning in and leaning back and male and female focused media, just very bad, very uncomfortable.
It's so horrible. It's like just tremendously mishandled.
Yes. And one of the things that's happened was many movies have been pulled, including Batgirl, which from all reports was essentially done and ready for release. And kind of
tested okay.
And from the rumors and kind of press reports, it seems that it was mainly shelved for tax reasons, which means that they could write it off and not have to spend the money for marketing. And, you know, use it for money saving. Now, on one hand, yes, you know, these places are businesses and they have to do things for their financial reasons. Still seems stupid. But my point is, this movie, Breakfast of Champions, was already in the can, shipped to theaters. They probably had done some marketing already since it was probably not far from a wide release.
Yeah.
I wonder what went into the calculus of being like, this is so bad, we're just not even going to bother. Because they probably wouldn't have made much money, but they would have made something.
Yeah. Yeah. My only thought is that they would have said that it was toxic for the brand of the studios or the actors or the director to be seen associated with a movie that was deemed to be so unwatchable from their perspective.
Yeah,
that's
maybe.
Like the only thing I can think of.
Maybe.
But especially now, it doesn't make sense that they wouldn't just try to get some extra money from it. Like, I mean, Lord knows I did not love this movie, but Bruce Willis does a lot better in this than like anything that he's been in for the last like 4 years easily. So like, why not just re-release it? But I don't know. Maybe we can try to get a hashtag going for it. Release this bad movie, please.
Release Breakfast of Champions or not. We don't really care either way.
You're just leaving money on the table.
So I'm going to talk about a couple of interesting things I liked before we, I don't really have a lot of other topics to bring up, but have you ever seen the movie She Dies Tomorrow?
Mm-mm.
So it's a fairly small horror film that came out a couple years ago. And the premise is essentially this woman believes that she's going to die the following day. And it's like an absolute paranoia that kind of just takes over her life. And her friend comes over to try to console her. And this feeling is contagious. And now her friend also believes that she's going to die tomorrow. And then like she calls up her parents and now her parents believe they're going to die tomorrow. Huh. And it's very interesting, kind of very creepy. Like as people, like there's a scene where they take this woman to the doctor because they think she's having a mental breakdown. And she's like explaining to the doctor that she's going to die tomorrow. And the doctor is like, wow, I have to go home to my family. And he just like walks out of the hospital.
Wow.
Yeah. So this whole idea of like an idea spreading and changing your worldview and being like contagious. This movie Breakfast of Champions reminded me of that with the whole book that Kilgore Trout writes. And then mm-hmm. essentially the kind of final third premise of this movie is nobody else matters. You know, like you're the hero, you're the like only non-robot or whatever. I don't remember what he calls everybody else, but and that's Bruce Willis is just like, oh, everybody else is a robot. Well, I'm going to go wild and jumps up on the piano and they go bananas. I like that concept as like, as a story to tell, mm-hmm. but burying it under the rest of this movie was unfortunate.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's like, it's just, I don't feel like it goes anywhere near as far as it could. It just feels like a weird end to the movie rather than something that's like thought out and like thematically going in that direction from the whole time. So, I don't know.
Do you have anything else you want to say? I have a couple funny comments to make and then we can move on.
Oh, I've got some, maybe some good things to say about it. I liked seeing several of the actors who are in this movie. Glenn Headey. Yes. Name pronunciation.
I'll take it.
Okay. I liked her in this movie. I liked Albert Finney in this movie. I liked Nick Nolte. And then you got to see some good little cameos. Shout out to our boy, Michael Clark Duncan. Love him. He's only in this movie for a second. Same thing with a Owen Wilson cameo. He's in it for like a split second as a
TV news host. I saw this in the IMDb trivia and they said he was under a bunch of makeup and I need to go back and, cause I don't remember if I caught that or not. I think I remember seeing it
immediately, but I don't know.
I think I did. He's in like a hotel or something watching TV.
No. He's like on TV. He's like an interview.
No. I'm saying Bruce Willis is in a hotel, I think, watching TV. Also, this movie has the most awkward of sex scenes when him and his secretary or assistant or whatever go off to that bank or not bank hotel, and he's just like watching TV the whole time.
Because she wants the TV on while they're having sex, and it's like commercials of him. It was like, oh my God, what the fuck am I watching?
Also, the over-the-top use of like MS Word art that just flies through the...
Oh, yeah. So much Comic Sans in this movie.
And just... then it's... He's like, my head is spinning. And then you see like a picture of his brain just rotating inside of his head.
Yeah. Yeah, this movie is like so on the nose with its themes. Yeah. Oh, and the last person that I wanted to shout out was my boy Chip Zien from Into the Woods, the studio like cast version or the original cast version, and the recorded version. He plays the baker, and then he has been in like no good movies that I can tell. Like, he's been in The Siege. He was the duck in that one Marvel movie that's very bad, Howard the Duck. He played Howard, and he's been in like other movies that like are just terrible. So poor guy needs to get a better agent, but he plays like a trucker in one scene and he's good. He's fine. I don't know. Anyways, those are all things I had to say about this movie.
Okay. Well, before we move on, I wanted to call out this movie. The IMDb page has the most absolutely bananas batshit trivia I think I've ever seen. And I haven't read every Bruce Willis movie's trivia page, but I've skimmed most of them. Mm-hmm. And at the bottom, there are three trivia items, all with like one or two out of 20 like votes found this interesting, which tells you how bad they are. I'll read them to you. Bruce Willis previously starred in Color of Night, 1994, and then 5 years later, Bruce starred in Breakfast of Champions in 1999. In fact, this is the correct order as part of everyday life, as night comes before breakfast, by taking those specific words from both those film titles.
They really be letting anybody write these IMDb trivia things.
I know. Well, let's keep going. At one point, Mo, played by Will Patton, gives Kilgore Trout, played by Albert Finney, a lift in his truck. Patton wears a woolly hat throughout this scene.
No, get the fuck out. That's the only thing that it says?
Yeah.
What the fuck? Okay, I'm so ready for the last
one. All right. The last one. Will Patton, Owen Wilson, and Russ Wilson all have the same number of letters in their first and last name. Of course, Owen and Russ's last name are the same. That's it.
That's me scraping the bottom of the barrel to try to find IMDb trivia.
There was like a decent amount of IMDb trivia about this movie. Like, it wasn't nothing. But
You know what happened? This is probably like right when IMDb came out and people could start writing trivia down. One of the tech guys is like, oh, let's talk about a movie that nobody ever watches. And I'll just show you how to make trivia in the office. And they're like, oh, I got a good trivia for this. That's how that all came about. Because there's no way that like somebody did this in like our modern day, the year of our Lord, 2022, they took the time out of their day to count those letters, fucking write that thing, sign up for the IMDb account. Oh my God. I can't. I cannot. I'm a new man now.
The whole breakfast comes or night comes before breakfast. That one.
Could we make like a whole story based on Bruce Willis titles in order and make it make sense?
Oh, I don't know. That's a good thought experiment.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I don't know that I want to try, but we already have our start.
Oh, okay. all right. Moving on. Let's talk a little bit about Bruce Willis. So I think I don't really know what he's trying to do here. I think he's buried under the same level of like strange movie facade that the rest of this movie's buried under. He doesn't stand out as being any weirder or more normal than anybody else in this. Mm-hmm. And Yeah, I didn't find his performance at all particularly appealing. I think he's supposed to be having a nervous breakdown, and I never really got, like, we could talked about 12 Monkeys earlier. 12 Monkeys definitely showed a much more Bruce Willis kind of on the edge of like a nervous breakdown in a lot of those scenes. This movie, I was confused as to, was everybody on drugs or what? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that, like, if you compare this movie to, like, Sixth Sense or Unbreakable or 12 Monkeys, like, really, really solid Bruce Willis performances, I think that this movie just falls very flat. And it's crazy, too, because I think that I read that he was really interested in doing this movie and was, like, pushing really hard to get it made. So, I don't know. Maybe he just had, like, a really positive experience working with Alan Rudolph on Mortal Thoughts, but... You know,
oh boy, yeah, maybe,
you know, that movie's in the bottom half of my list, so you do what you want to do, Bruce, I guess, but wouldn't have been my choice.
Okay, so should we talk about box office numbers?
Sure, I'll just go over it briefly. They spent $12 million on this movie, so pretty indie, not the smallest budget, but the fifth smallest budget, I think. So you had like Mortal Thoughts, Look Who's Talking, The Player, Pulp Fiction, and Four Rooms all costing less. And I guess this cost the exact same amount as Beavis and Butthead Do America.
Wow.
But this movie made the least amount of money by far out of any of the movies we've covered. Made $178,000. $178,278. They kept track of the trailing numbers because it was that bad.
That's pretty bad.
Yep.
It was only in like 12 theaters for one weekend or something. So
yeah, it makes sense. It's a loss of, like, they spent 67 times more on it than they got back.
Man. Yeah.
It's crazy.
Speak of tax write-offs.
Yeah. Tax write-offs.
Okay.
Bad.
All right. Just go ahead and turn yourself in. Let's talk about the Star Trek connection. We have our classic Gerald Quist, makeup artist to the stars, and the stars being Bruce Willis, worked with Bruce Willis many a time. We have Carl Wiedergott, who in Breakfast of Champions played Homer, which I don't remember that character. So
I'll have to rewatch it.
Yeah. You do that and track everybody's name. Yep. Ironically, this guy is also in a lot of Simpsons characters as just random voices, though, not Homer. he was this person, Carl Wiedergott, was in an episode of Voyager as a character named Amaron. And he was also in an episode of Enterprise as a character named Lar. And then finally, we have Deborah Coleman, also a makeup artist in this movie. She was a makeup artist for 2009's Star Trek.
Ah.
Which I don't remember. Have we had anyone from the Abramverse?
I believe we have. I thought that we had some Star Trek Beyond connection a while back.
Okay. Okay.
Like maybe very early on.
Maybe so.
But I don't remember.
But yeah. Right. Those on. Are our Star Trek connection.
Right on. It's been so long since we've recorded, I forgot that we did a Star Trek connection for a second.
You're like, what are you doing?
Yeah, what Star Trek what? Huh? Who? How's it? What's it?
Trek to the stars.
Yes, I'll trek to the stars. Kendrick, where would you put this movie in relation to every other Bruce Willis movie?
So this is our 37th movie that we've talked about. Yeah. I think I'm gonna put it at number 33 right below Look Who's Talking, and right above Cosmic Sin.
Well, I'm going to put it right above Cosmic Sin, right below The Kid at 33.
Wow.
Which is the second time we've ever had anything line up, I think.
That is wild that we... And also, I love how I'm...
Oh, Cosmic Sin is also in line.
Cosmic Sin is now 34 for both of us, right?
Mm-hmm.
And where do you have Look Who's Talking? Oh, way up there.
18, baby.
Wow. Look Who's Talking for me is number 32, and then The Kid is number 31, and you have The Kid as 32.
Yep. I'm ready for some good Bruce Willis movies.
I think we have a couple coming up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we do. We definitely do.
A Bruce Willis movie. I don't know if they're any good.
Oh, you're a jokester.
Yes, I am.
Do you know what we do with jokesters where I come from?
Tell me.
Well, we line them up in front of a big disc. We make them chant something as it spins.
Oh, sounds kinky.
It's completely consensual. And
that's good. Most all kinks should be consensual
and very just sexual.
Putting that out.
It is correct. And we make them say in sync the same phrase every time, which is
Whisk
that wheel.
I should have you know that I'm on baby monitor duty tonight, so I had to double check we didn't just wake up my sleeping child.
Okay, so this question doesn't have a credit to it, so I am sorry about that, but it's a great question. If Bruce Willis had to be silent throughout this movie, how much physical acting would be required?
A lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
He actually doesn't say that much in this movie. Does he?
You know, I don't think he does say a whole lot, but it would still be very strange.
Yeah. He makes a lot of grunts and groans.
Yeah. And he says a lot during like the commercials and stuff.
Oh yeah, that's true. That's true.
So just seeing him pantomime, like,
we didn't even talk about the weird Hawaii set and like trip to Hawaii they're gonna give you. And
we
all
didn't
that.
Even talk about like the moment where a bunch of Bruce Willises come snapping out of the hallway. Yeah. And then you realize that they're all wearing Bruce Willis masks, and you're like,
I really wanted to find my own version of that paper Bruce Willis mask. I wonder if they sell that anywhere.
And just show up to our meeting tonight on
yes, yes,
on this app.
Yes,
fucking Bruce Willis mask.
That would have been great.
I probably would have given you a high five and then logged off forever.
You would have Homer Simpson to just nope right out of the bar.
Yep, I would have. I would have just back through the bushes.
All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for this episode of Where There's a Willis, There's a Way. Thank you for listening to our insightful conversation. Josh, it's been great talking to you.
Likewise.
If you want to send us an email, williswaypod@gmail.com. You can follow us on social media @williswaypod. Find all previous episodes on Apple Podcasts or wherever you can find podcasts. But go to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. You can find me on Twitter @kmartinix. That's KMARTINIX.
And you can find me on Twitter @joshingcarter. Now, every single episode, we like to end our podcast with a little sweet treat to close out the show. And this is just any sort of recommendation. Kendrick, do you have any sort of recommendation for people, a sweet treat for this week?
I do. There is a book called Blood and Chrome, which is about the making of Mad Max Fury Road.
Mm.
And it's called Blood, Sweat, and Chrome. It's by Kyle Buchanan. Mad Max Fury Road is one of my favorite movies of all time. And this book makes evident what a miracle this movie was. Just the fact that everything came together. You know, George Miller had been working on this movie for decades upon decades. The cast was always in flux. The location was in flux. They'd originally planned on filming in this desert in Australia. And then it, right before they started filming, it got a once in a century rain and turned the whole place into like a green flowering, beautiful place. So they had to just ship everything to Namibia. And not tell the studio, and the studio like showed up to see what's going on, and they were just already on boats headed to Africa. So it's great. Great book. Highly recommend it. So that's Blood, Sweat, and Chrome, The Wild and True Story of Mad Max Fury Road by Kyle Buchanan.
Wow. Wow. Thank you. That sounds awesome. How long of a book is it if I was interested in picking that up?
It's, let's see. Google says about 430 pages.
Okay. Okay. But a good read.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Very, very movie. Like enticing. Yeah.
I love that movie, so I might just pick that up. I'm not much of a reader, but I might have to.
Oh, well.
Yeah. Great. I'm actually going to keep it on theme. I'm going to skip over one of my tasty treats because I have a list of tasty treats that I'm going to refer to. But the one that I'm going to recommend is a video essay series called Bringing Back What's Stolen. And it's about women in action movies and the different tropes that they're kind of forced into and character archetypes. And it's based pretty heavily around Mad Max and showing how Fury Road breaks a lot of the molds as far as like what is expected of women in action movies. So it's done by a person on YouTube who goes by Innuendo Studios, and it's called Bringing Back What's Stolen. And I will link the first video in the playlist in the show notes below, so guys, check it out.
Awesome. Great. I should I'll watch that.
Oh, you like,
all right, that's gonna do it for us tonight. Next time we're gonna be covering Rugrats Go Wild.
Woo! I'm going wild just thinking about it. Hopefully it'll be easier to find.
Yeah, right, hopefully.
I haven't even looked yet. Maybe we aren't covering that next time. Yeah. We'll see.
Joke's on you. We're covering somebody else gone wild. I don't know. I was trying to. I was like, that could sound bad in the fast. But yeah. Thanks, everybody. Goodbye.
Yep. Goodbye. Oh, yes, it's fun time.
Okay, Rugrats Go Wild is on HBO.
Oh, that's good. For now.
Who knows for how long? I don't think I've seen any Rugrats in my life, so this will be fun.